space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We made it to episode one of season three, I guess, of TOS, and we're joined by Sean and Clay to talk about Spock's Brain, the classic episode of TOS. So that's what, Sean, that's what you called it when I told you this is the one that you were going to get. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for having me on for the first, maybe the last time.
we were talking about, before we went to record, you were just saying that you might have a hard time with the context of how to talk about this one because it's so interesting, I guess, is what I'll lead into. But anyway, I'm going to...
You mean like all the subtext?
Yes.
And like complexity to this plot and writing?
Yes. Like I had to go out and sort of meditate by a mountain to really understand this one.
Yeah. You mean the knowledge? Do you have the knowledge?
They stole his brain. In this episode, an alien female beams aboard the ship. After incapacitating the rest of the crew, she removes Spock's brain. Kirk and the crew have to work hours to locate and restore it before Spock's body dies. Directed by Mark Daniels, written by Lee Cronin, aired back on September 20th, 1968. We're going to take a break, and then me, Sean, and Clay are going to come back and break down Spock's brain.
My God. Spock, what happened?
I found him on the table.
Like this? No, not like this. What happened? I don't know. Got him on complete life support. Was he dead?
He was worse than dead.
What do you mean? Jim. Come on, Bones, what's the mystery?
His brain is gone.
All right, guys. So, Spock's Brain. Season 3 of TOS, not well received. Spock's Brain, extremely well received, I suppose. how do you guys want to start talking about this? I imagine that this might be an episode where we don't stick to the episode that much, and it was more sort of the periphery of like what the episode means and everything like that. But let me know if I'm wrong and if you guys actually want to break down the specifics of this one.
Well, Sean, what's your familiarity with the original series?
I tried to watch it three times after watching TNG many, many, many times. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't penetrate it. I liked the Corbinite maneuver, and I liked the one that your favorite, which is like the submarine episode or whatever.
Oh, right, yep.
But I was telling Wes before we started recording, it's hard to judge these overall because they're all important, of course, but a lot of them suck. You know, they don't hold up. They get a lot of street cred for, you know, being the first of its kind or whatever, but, oh, man. I tried to watch this one twice. The first time, I actually fell asleep, and the second time, I just listened to it while I was working, and I didn't understand Spock's information dump at the end of the episode to explain what the hell happened. So I'm totally open to hearing what the hell I just watched.
I mean, this is... You know, this is regarded as, like, one of the worst episodes of TOS.
This might be... I don't want to, you know, be too grandiose here and be the inverse of what everybody says about the Tribbles being a really great episode, but this might be one of the worst episodes of TV I've ever seen.
Okay, so, see, I'm a little bit different. I kind of am of the opinion that it gets a worse rap than, like, I think Alternative Factor is a worse episode.
Like, see, I was going to ask you about that because I was going to ask you if you thought that was worse because... Well, continue.
Well, I think that Spock's Brain has a story. It's just stupid. It's like really, really stupid, where the Alternative Factor doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, so I agree.
That's kind of the difference. Like this one kind of makes me like roll my eyes and laugh at it, while the Alternative Factor was more just like, this is like infuriating that none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
Go ahead.
No, I'm pretty much done with it. I mean,
thanks for joining us, everyone.
I think a good way to sort of break into this one, right, is that this is season three. The show wasn't going to survive until they had a huge, like, letter writing campaign into NBC. Mm-hmm. And so they came back with this. NBC responded to it by saying, you can have your show, but the budget gets cut quite a bit. Yep. And this is really a well-disguised bottle episode that has the most boring story you could tack into a bottle show.
I thought for a second this was, you know, I looked up the trivia on this episode as I was watching it, and I was almost positive that it was going to be, that was going to say something like, Leonard Nimoy had a scheduling conflict for this episode, so that's why he's, you know, he's not available. But then he's in it.
Yes.
I thought this was going to be like, you know, there's that Prisoner episode where they put his brain into somebody else's body because Patrick McGoohan was off shooting a movie.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be like that, and Spock just wasn't going to be in it. He's in it. He just sits in a chair for 40 yeah. minutes.
And then they put a goober or whatever on his head and have him walk around like beep, beep, beep.
They drive him like a friggin' robot.
Yeah.
He's like an RC car.
Radio. Yeah, radio. He's like Pro-Am Spock for all those NES people out there.
What's funny is that they get a lot out of him using a remote control that has like four buttons on it that apparently they can make him do whatever they want with his four buttons. But
I know. They at least have a touchpad.
They can control a brainless body and have it walk around, but they can't do brain surgery.
Right.
Like, they don't know how to put a brain into a body, but they know how to control one as though it was a toy without a brain.
Let me... I kind of want to stay...
Well, yeah.
A little bit focused here. I'm gonna ask you one question. The weirdest thing about this episode to me, let me know what you guys think about it. This is a series and a show based on really far-fetched ideas, like science fiction far-fetched ideas. They meet like these godlike beings and everything. You know, they can travel faster than light. They meet all these aliens and they can understand them and everything like that. Why is the concept so silly here? Like, what about taking out his brain strikes me as like, this is a terrible idea for the show to do. Like, why is that a bridge too far? Is it a bridge too far for you when you're watching it? Or do you think that this is like an acceptable plot line that they just didn't do well?
Well, if they like took his consciousness, you know, in the 60s, I know they didn't know as much about brains and computers, but I feel like if this was a TNG, they would have changed it or tweaked it to be like they took out his consciousness or his soul. So his brain was still there. It was just running on standby, basically, but they needed to find his, you know, humanity program, which had been sucked out by an alien.
Or like they downloaded his brain or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But like the idea of like
removing it.
They took it out, but luckily they tied off all the tubes, so nothing's leaking, and he can apparently just sit there like a vegetable, not dying, while they look for it.
You just run like a hot iron through there and just cauterize everything.
I know.
I enjoyed the sort of bad understanding of the brain where McCoy is like, they took out his brain, but his body is running on his like autonomic, like, nervous system or something. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is all coming yeah. from the brain. I don't know why they think he can survive this. But something about I think you're right. It's like in a later show they would have just downloaded his brain as opposed to physically removing it and sort of having him drive around like a little car.
Right.
It makes it seem ridiculous.
What's weird about it is like now that you said that, Sean, the idea of downloading his brain doesn't feel super out of place, but removing his brain does. And I think it's because the actual removing of the brain feels like a schlocky, like, 50s sci-fi thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this episode overall, I think, is... this is like the epitome of what people make fun of when they make fun of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Except for there's no Kirk doesn't have any, you know, weird space sex in this episode. But aside from that, it's like everything that you would harp on as being a hallmark of, oh, stupid Star Trek is pretty much in this episode.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's a few things that really don't age well. Like some of the sexist lines, they're not intended to be. But Kirk looks at her and he's like, take me to your leader. Like, take me to the man in charge. Or he refers to the guy in charge as a he, of course. Well, Scotty later is like, these women don't have the ability to understand complex
engineering.
But
that's part of the whole, like, I was like, oh, the show's going to make it through without being too offensive to women. But then the info dump at the end from Spock is basically men and women on this planet moved to, like, the men went up to the surface and the women came down here. And that caused basically both societies to fall apart. Like, neither one could function. And the women are just too stupid to figure out how to operate the machinery, basically.
Uh-huh. But... how did the men end up dressed in animal, you know, right, furs, like, and clubs? Yeah, like, what? All right, we'll go outside with nothing and rocks and sticks. You guys stay in here with, like, 60s stools and paint and, you know, lights.
Because men left to their own devices turn to savages, whereas women left to their own devices just create really nice costumes and interior design.
Right. They get nice lighting going. Well, Clay, this was unusual because you don't normally text me about the episode after you've watched it. This one, I think you texted me mid-watching it just saying, like, this episode sucks. So
lots of yous. Lots of yous.
So why the strong response? Do you think it's worse or better than Alternative Factor? And, like, why do you think it's so bad?
I think that it is probably better than Alternative Factor for the reasons that you said. Because Alternative Factor is, like, it's just incomprehensible. Like, it's all over the place, and it's, the story doesn't make any sense. This one has, I mean, the story is, for as dumb as it is, it makes sense. This is like it's like an Ed Wood movie, basically, where it's not very good, but you can track what's happening.
There's maybe 10 minutes of story is the problem.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's 10 minutes of story, and then you can tell where, you know, it feels stretched super, super thin. The reason I was trying to think back of what actually set me off to write that to you. And I remembered it was, after they take his brain out, there's like a 5 minute sequence where Kirk, Chekhov, and Sulu are just looking at a map and talking about the map. And I don't know what the hell that was about. I my eyes just glazed over, and it just was like, this is it. And also, you know, it was strange because it kind of like it kind of summed everything up too. The only people in the scene were guys in yellow shirts, and for some reason that felt really like bland because it was the same color, and everything else is usually so technicolor. So that felt really kind of you know washed out. And then the map stuff was really fucking boring.
Yeah.
And then that probe at the beginning. What the hell was up with that probe?
Right. How? Well, I guess that comes down to my understanding of the plot. How do they eventually learn to do all this stuff? Like, they wear that helmet, right? And they, like, matrix themselves some knowledge.
Yeah.
Is that what the woman did to steal his brain? Or
I have no idea.
Okay.
Well, she used a really, really sharp space knife and cauterized all the wounds.
So my understanding is, she put that helmet on, but apparently you lose knowledge if you don't wear the helmet all the time, which is, well, you know, they try to make drama at the end by having McCoy run out of memory or something.
It's funny. Clay is a good expression that he uses a lot, saying it's a long way to go for a ham sandwich.
Yes.
And in this one, there is no sandwich. It's just a long way to go, and then it's over.
No, that's my point about it's a bottle show with a story that doesn't suit a bottle show, because absolutely nothing happens in this. Like, it's basically... Yeah. Kirk saying, "Give me back Spock's brain" 100 times to the woman, and she's like, "No, I can't give you the providers or whatever they're called won't allow it to happen."
Right. Yeah.
And then there's no conflict. Like, and the whole, even the conflict, you think of Spock being in the thing, Spock doesn't even seem like Spock to me in this episode.
No, when he wakes up at the end, he's like super talkative and weird. And part of me was thinking, "Oh man, if they like subtly work in that McCoy actually fucked up his brain, that's actually kind of great." But obviously they don't do that. It was just in service of that stupid joke where they're like, "Hey, maybe I shouldn't have turned his mouth back on."
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that was probably the ham sandwich right there.
even that was like such a cliche of television, where it's like you have a bunch of shit that happens before, and then at the end you just like, you end on a freeze frame laughing stupid joke, like the end of Police Squad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, before Sean's going to run before we get to the end of this, but Sean, I wanted to get your opinion. I think this episode works pretty well for it. What did you think of Kirk in this episode?
I don't know. How about you guys go for
it? Well, did Kirk fit your perception of what Kirk is in this? Do you have a perception of what Kirk is?
That's fair enough. Okay, so I think Kirk is like the captain before we knew anything about space and about the military. And I think that his sort of cowboy shenanigans or diplomacy, whatever, is really stupid. And it just, you know, like the confidence he has at the beginning, like, oh, we're going to get it back. And someone says, well, you know, there's a whole galaxy where it could be. He's like, fuck it. I 8 hours, no problem. We're going to figure this out. And they're like, dude, what? How arrogant are you? Seriously. You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of training you had. I know you cheated on the Kobayashi Maru or whatever the fuck, but... yeah, Kirk is really tough to swallow. I respect that he's in good shape and he's got the face for it.
He's looks fit. Like he can bench like 225, 250, so I respect that pretty much.
He actually looks a little chubbier this season. Everyone's haircut is a little different. I mean, I think the worst part of this episode might be Scotty's new haircut because he looks fucking ridiculous with his haircut like that.
That's the other thing. When did Scotty become like the everyone's favorite grandpa? Because that's the one I know from the movies. But you go back far enough, he looks like a younger dude, and he doesn't look like Grandpa Scotty.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't age very well. He's actually in the original series quite a bit. But the reason I asked you, Sean, is because Clay might be able to sort of start this discussion. The Kirk wasn't always like this, and Clay, you sent me that article about like how the public perception of Kirk is wrong, and I think that's true. But he's over the course of the series, Shatner turns him into the public persona that people remember. And he wasn't always like that. Like, it's been a slow change.
What was he before that, then?
Before he's not the sort of cowboy rule breaker is the public perception of him. Like, he's very regulate. Like, he's very into regulations of Starfleet and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Corviknight maneuver I've seen a bunch of times, so... You're just thinking back to that. You're absolutely right. He's way more measured. He asks the crew questions to get them to figure stuff out. Like, he's already kind of a two steps ahead of them, but he's patiently like, oh, we can also learn from this adventure.
And even Shatner isn't doing his weird dramatic pause thing that he started to do recently. Right. Like, he does it a lot in this episode, but Shatner was much more restrained early on, and now he's just kind of. Like, his acting when he gets hit with the pain belt or whatever that thing is just...
the menstrual cramp belt.
Yeah. And so, wait. So they can remove that belt by pushing the red button? Is that...
That's all it takes.
That's my favorite line from the episode is Spock's like, to get the belts off, you have to go find that remote control that the leader has and push the red button. He goes, I know that doesn't make any sense. I was like, Spock, that's the only thing that makes sense in this whole goddamn episode is that fact that you can push the button.
Oh, I thought they had to push the button that was literally on the belt itself.
No,
okay. It's on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they need to use that's why they use robot Spock at the end to press the button.
Yep.
Oh, although see, I fell asleep.
If you were only listening to it, you might have missed that.
I lasted as far as like they were in some space elevator with rocks, and then there's some girl in blue who doesn't know who she is, and then I fell asleep.
So, as someone who hasn't been watching a lot of TOS, did you find that this episode was like representative of what you think about TOS?
So I was honestly going to give it like a 2.5. It seemed like an average episode to me, but I guess that shows how little respect I have for it. And I do respect it, but you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it.
There's a certain, like, I totally understand what you mean, Sean, because there's, you know, I really like Doctor Who, the current version of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But, and I'm really interested in, like, the history of it, but I have zero interest in watching old Doctor Who. I never watched it when I grew up, and I have no interest in watching it now, because for the same reasons. I've tried it multiple times, and it's just it looks so cheap, and it just, it's really tough to get into if it's not something that you're familiar with. So I totally understand.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. The real, education, the real entertaining part about TOS is learning about the 60s and Roddenberry and the story behind it and sort of how it evolved and like the stuff between the actors. I think it's easy to romanticize that period. You know, you see an old photo of Spock next to his sports car, or Leonard Nimoy, rather.
Right, yeah.
And it kind of triggers all these like, oh man, what a crazy time. But when you look at the actual content itself, it's not a lot there. But there's definitely a lot of meat on the bone when you look at the whole biography of that whole thing.
I totally agree with that. And it strikes me as funny that, like, I go on the Star Trek Reddit a lot. And it's funny, like, I think that article you sent, Clay, about the, like, perception of it extends basically to TOS. Like, mm-hmm. there was some conversation I was having on Reddit, and one of the persons was just like, I was like, you know, I don't think there's that many great episodes. I was like, maybe TOS is like five great episodes in its entire mm-hmm. run. And right. someone was just like, oh, couldn't disagree more. It's like, this is probably the finest television show that's ever been created. And it's no. just like, I don't think you're looking at this honestly. Appropriately. I can understand you liking it, but the show has problems. Like, and it's, you can still like yeah. it. It's not the best Star Trek series.
And yeah. I think that, you know, Roddenberry got so lucky. I mean, not just in that he got a second chance with TNG, but you think about how much he hurt TNG with the first four seasons by not allowing conflict or whatever, or through the whole thing. And then he wouldn't go near religion. And then you look how bad this is. I mean, like, you count up the stuff he did right and the stuff he did wrong. There's a lot of stuff on the he did it wrong list. But luckily, he happened to cast people that, you know, hit a chord with people, with viewers, and the Cold War was going on, so it kind of resonated with that. But I mean, he just seems like one lucky son of a bitch, Gene Roddenberry.
It's funny you mentioned that. This is the season he's not involved in the show. yeah, so apparently he dumped everything on people, and that's why they sort of have this sort of roughshod example of what season three is going to be. But I think that to me, the interesting thing about going back to TOS is that the ethos of TOS is so different from what Roddenberry eventually came to want TNG to be about. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes more sense to me as to what he thought TNG would be, where in his mind, he's thinking 100 years from the TOS era, things are going to be different, right? Like, and the TOS era, one of the most fascinating things I've learned about watching all the episodes of the show is that TOS has this real philosophy that people can't have it good. If a society has it good, something's wrong with it, and Kirk's going to come in and fuck it up. Like, he's going to intentionally... The show basically believes that having things too good is wrong, and you need, like, difficulty in your... like, conflict in your life in order to experience life to the fullest. Mm. And it's really different from what TNG would eventually sort of declare would be the way forward.
Right.
Well, that's really interesting, because, I mean, it's... for me, looking at both series... the thing that stands out to me is how it stands out more knowing the way that he kind of changed between the two of them, but it's really stands out how he created, after the fact, created this whole ethos of like harmony or whatever. Because from what I understand, basically between the end of TOS and the beginning of TNG, he kind of turned into L. Ron Hubbard a little bit.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, because I don't think. You know, people talk about all the time. There was a meme going around for a while that said, like, this is the future that liberals hope for, and it was a picture of the TNG crew.
Right.
And, you know, it's this that sort of ethos is applied to the entire Star Trek thing, but it really doesn't exist in the original series.
No,
it's the original series is a lot more of like a swashbuckling whiz bang sci-fi show.
Yeah, you're right. The way that sometimes Roddenberry would go on in some of the interviews he did in the 80s was like he would retcon his own biography, and he would retcon TOS in a way and say, you know, this is what Star Trek's always been about. And it's like, no, I mean, like Wes just said, you know, a lot of these episodes are about if a society is too good, then there's something wrong. And there's a lot, I mean, it's totally different. And I think that he did buy into his L. Ron Hubbardian legacy.
Yeah, at some point, it's more just the influence of communism in the 60s. Like anyone sort of arguing for a perfect society, the response to it is no, like this is a bad thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about it that way, but that's a really good point.
Yeah, because I think the writers are really just arguing against socialism in these cases. Because it's always planets where people don't have to do work and stuff.
Which is interesting because it turns into basically socialism. A socialist society.
Yeah. right. <Yes. laughs> It is fascinating. But yeah, Sean, if you have to go, do you want to give final thoughts and a rating for this guy?
Sure. I will say my final thoughts are again, I fell asleep.
At least you watched the right episode this time.
No, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say. I wish I had been on the Corbin Knight maneuver.
we can retcon you into that one.
And
you
might... But I guess if this is the worst one, I'm going to go with the crowd and say 1 out of 5.
yeah, that's interesting. But yeah,
I don't have a very educated response. Obviously, I apologize.
No, I appreciate your insight just for the to see, because if you're not familiar with the series, like to the point where I've been watching all the episodes, it's interesting to see like what you think of the episode. Yeah. And I think the fact that you were like, you know, I thought this one was okay, it's kind of right. Like indicative of public yeah. opinion of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just assumed they were all this terrible because I've watched like probably the first season and. There were a lot of middling episodes that maybe I fell asleep during those as well. I don't know.
Yes, yeah.
Anything that involves Shakespeare, you can usually skip. And there's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, what is with Roddenberry and Shakespeare? And Patrick Stewart, for that matter.
My theory about that is it's because it's public domain. Yeah, it's free. Pay for it.
Yep.
Oh, yep. That's a good reason, yeah.
Well, Sean, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
You'll be back.
I will try to, yeah, next time we do, if you do a movie or something like that, or, Voyager or Deep Space, please count me in for that.
We got to get you on Wrath of Khan, because you've never seen Wrath of Khan, right?
I've not seen the second half, yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you do a Patreon type of thing, I'd love to be on one of those long format. But yeah, maybe that's if that's just you two, I don't want to crowd the boys club.
No, you can join in. You can unplug your brain and put it into a test tube and talk to us through that way. But yeah, Sean, thanks for coming on the show.
Cool, guys. Take care. Thanks again.
See ya. Bye.
Anyway, Clay, we'll finish our conversation here about did you have anything that you wanted to add about Spock's brain?
Well, there was a couple things that stood out to me that were kind of interesting, but I was really, really reaching to find them.
Sure.
There's a couple like Lovecraftian kind of ideas that I'm always a sucker for that stuff, but in this case, I think they were implemented so poorly that they just came off really dumb.
Yeah.
The ancient city under the ice kind of thing is a very Lovecrafty thing. And there's also the concept of keeping his brain in that, radio box thing.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me of a Lovecraft story called "The Whisper in Darkness," which is one of my favorite stories. It's really cool. That's sort of like the punchline at the end is that these aliens are taking people's brains out and putting them in these boxes, and you can still talk to them. It's a whole thing.
So you're seeing a lot of Lovecraftian influence in TOS, I guess, at this point, because you've mentioned it before on a lot.
That's
of
a good point. Yeah, honestly, that doesn't super surprise me because I think around this time, I could be giving you false information here, but I think around this time was when Lovecraft really kind of started to pop up again.
Yep. And one of the writers on TOS is Robert Bloch, whose mentor was H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. So I think that his influence was probably out there. So it doesn't really surprise me to see that stuff. Oh, yeah. And I mean, in the 60s was when Roger Corman was doing all the Edgar Allan Poe movies, which then ended up turning into he was doing some Lovecraft movies. So that stuff definitely was coming back. And I think it was the first time since the stories that were originally published that he started to kind of come back into the public consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
So that stuff doesn't really surprise me that much. That being said, yeah, I think it's pretty much wasted. Anything that might be there is just wasted. And it's another swing at a matriarchal society that they really don't do well with.
No. I don't think they're not interested in this society whatsoever. Like they do that info dump at the very end where Spock's trying to explain like what the hell has gone on. And McCoy's just like, shut the fuck up. Like we're done talking about this.
The other time my eyes glazed over was like when Kirk gets into the shouting match with that woman, and they just like keep saying gibberish back and forth to each other about like the knowledge
yes.
and having the and I was like, what is going on? This is like, what does the script for this look like? Right. How do you act this?
No, I'm
it's like buzzwords back and forth at each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think
the globalism.
The total summary is this, so it's basically Twitter. I think the summary is that like. There is a story here. It's mm-hmm. maybe 10 minutes a story, and they pad it out unbelievably. Like, even the fact that they bring Spock's body to the planet is pure padding stuff. Like, he doesn't add anything. There's no reason for him to be there whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. could just bring the brain back to him. And
yeah, that's a good point.
His arguments with the woman are just endless about everything. And then the endless scene at the end where McCoy is performing the surgery is like 10 minutes of that scene. And it's like, why is this so long? Why is this so dull?
Yeah, I was almost positive that was going to be like half a second where he's like, well, now that I have this new knowledge. I've managed to put his brain back in, and now let's go home. But it was like I didn't even realize there was like 8 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, it's the we made fun of TNG. Like a lot of some of the bad TNG episodes would end in that fake drama where it's a countdown to destruction. You know, and we always used to say it's stupid. This scene is the same thing. It's there's no drama beyond the fact that McCoy's saying like, oh, he could die,
right?
And you know he's not going to die. There's nothing interesting to watch on screen, and it's just like a failure of an episode.
You mean you don't like half opacity dissolves of Forrest Kelly taking a shit?
And Scotty, for some reason, is just in there for – he's not adding anything to the scene, but he's just in that sort of montage.
I have to say, as far as like scientists go – feel like McCoy really dropped the ball here, because if I put on a magic helmet that gave me the knowledge to no brain kung fu, I would at least have told somebody, hey, why don't you like videotape this?
Right.
Or like, let me talk while I'm doing this so I can, because if he knows he's going to forget it, he should be writing it down or something.
I actually think that McCoy comes off the worst here, and maybe DeForest Kelly by extension. That scene in the it all stems back to the fact that taking Spock's brain out is like inherently ridiculous. When him and Kirk are talking about it in sickbay at first, and they're playing it so earnestly that it's like it's just it becomes comedy. And you don't think this episode is comedy, right?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Except for the end. The end is the only joke bit I think in it, but I think they're playing it deadly straight, and it's so bizarre. Him, DeForest Kelly's just got his hands out and he's just going, he took his brain, Jim. It's like, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah. You know, now that you bring it up about they could have just brought the brain back to him, why the fuck do they bring him dead? They only bring Spock down to the planet so Nimoy could get a paycheck, right?
I would think so. And they kind of work it into the plot by he's immune to the pain device.
Oh, yeah. That's the most ham-fisted thing I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, it's so weird. I mean, like, even if you try to look at that, like, as far as objective, like, medical practice, do they say anything about, like, being able to use his body to find the brain or anything? He's just there.
He's literally just there. It's even obtuse how it happens, because they're on the bridge and Kirk says something to Scotty about get him in shape. And then he beams him down with a remote control head.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man.
It's really bizarre.
I think that's the thing that's really interesting to me about this episode is that, you know, we kind of talked about it a little bit before, but it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's just like really hacky 60s sci-fi.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really not like I
feel that this episode does not feel like the Star Trek show had been to this point. And it's funny because it's written by the showrunner from the first two seasons.
Oh, wow.
So he's using a pen name, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it was directed by Mark Daniels, who had been a director for like 50% of the episodes in the first and second season. And apparently he quit right after this episode.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Just said he didn't want to do it anymore. But it doesn't... I mean, I think the biggest example is Spock. Why Spock has this weird affect when he's in the computer, right? He's like, oh, Jim, good to see you. Oh, right. Scotty's here too. Oh, Dr. McCoy. It's like, why is he talking?
I mean, I don't know how I would talk if I was a disembodied brain that was running an entire planet. So
getting everything done. I think we've talked about this one to death. We're certainly brain dead at any point. But let's take a break. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back. Sean gave it a 2.5, I think, before he signed off. But
that's generous.
We'll see where we come in right after this.
Congratulations, Doctor. And thank you.
How do you feel, Spock?
On the whole, Captain, I believe I'm quite fit. This is fascinating. A remarkable example of a retrograde civilization. At the peak, advanced beyond any of our capabilities. And now, operating at this primitive level, which you saw. And it all began thousands of years ago, when a glacial age reoccurred. You see, this underground complex was developed for the women. The men remained above. And a male-female schism took place. A fascinating cultural development of a kind
which has... I knew it was wrong.
I shouldn't have done it.
What's that?
I should have never reconnected his mouth.
So yeah, as we said before, Sean left. I think the interesting thing about I did like his perspective as having not watched really any of the episodes where he thinks this one falls, because I think it's like what you that article you sent me. This is like a sort of popular perception of Star Trek, I think, yeah. And it's a bad episode. And I think that the public perception plays up all the bad. It makes sense. It plays up the cliches, but they're like they're not the show at its best in the way that, like, if you were making a parody of, like, The Next Generation, I think would be. It's always the sort of weakest parts of the show, and I feel that this episode really fits that. This is all the hackiest parts that Star Trek is, and someone who isn't familiar with the show would think that all the episodes are like this.
Yeah. I'm trying, you know, I've been trying to think about it, and I'm trying to wrap my brain around it. Like, there's something about it. Well, why don't you go into your rating, and then I'll give you mine, and maybe try and expand on what I'm trying to say.
I'm gonna give it a one, but yeah. It's similar to our conversation about City on the Edge and Trouble with Tribbles. It's, I think the public perception of this one is different from what it actually is. I don't think this is actually the worst episode of TOS.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was being a bit hyperbolic when I said it was the worst episode of TV I've ever seen, because, well, it's not.
It's different than the alternative. I had a different emotional response than the alternative factor. Like, the alternative factor almost made me feel nothing, where this one I was just like, I can't believe how bad this is. Like, the alternative factor was more just sort of, like, it wasn't even mesmerizing in how bad it was. It was more like it was so utterly boring that I didn't want to think about anything that was going on. And this is the opposite, where I do like to consider what the hell went wrong with this one.
Yeah, you know, for me, I think as far as an episode of Star Trek goes, I'm going to give it a one. Because it's not good.
Right.
But I think it's a different kind of bad. Because the first maybe 10 minutes or so, like up until they beam down, is legit terrible.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it's just, not to open this can up again, but it's like objectively bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's boring. The
idea is silly.
Yeah, the idea is dumb, but see, that I was trying to hesitate. I was trying to not to say that, because looking at the rest of it, the ideas are really dumb and it's really silly, but it's not necessarily like bad.
Unsalvageable.
Like, it's not like unwatchable.
Yeah,
it's like you can watch this and just be kind of enjoy the ridiculousness of how silly the plot is.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're trying to gauge it inside of what would be a great or bad Star Trek episode, yeah, it's definitely a bad one.
I mean,
do you know what I mean?
I'm trying to
elaborate on it.
Well, let me ask you. I think that the episode actually would have been redeemed if they had written it as a comedy and they had sort of appreciated the ridiculousness of what the Spock character was doing the entire time.
Yeah,
you know, they don't do that. Like, it's not a. There's no way they could have shot this and not realized that this is ridiculous, that he's walking around like this. Like, how about we have the character sort of make like fun of it, or have the Spock character interact in sort of weird ways with them while he's a zombie.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't do anything. And that maybe that would have been a two, but this is just like a failure on some level.
Yeah. I think the earnestness of it really undoes it as a concept and as an episode. It would actually have been kind of fun is if they had worked that into the plot.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe they don't actively make him walk around like a robot. Like, it's some sort of side effect of the, like, basically they have to follow him down to the planet or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, some shit like that. So they can kind of, like, they can observe him and see the silliness of it, but not have it be like, yeah, so I just, you know, I plugged this, you know, RC car motor into the back of his head and I can drive him.
And he, you know, you could have had a scene where we were making sort of fun of it and Trouble with Tribbles, the bar fight scene where the con man is sort of dancing around the people fighting. You know, like, you could have had a fight scene here where the brain dead Spock is just sort of walking around in the chaos of what's going on.
The brain dead Spock is a really good band name.
But yeah, I don't have anything else to say about this one. I think it's just a one on my terms. It's just not the worst show that the series ever did and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm looking back on it and being a little bit nicer to it now that I'm thinking about it, but yeah, I would give it definitely a one overall, but I would say, like, that's a high one.
Yes. Yeah. I mean this one is the most, it's the most that I've checked the Netflix timer in a long time. I checked it maybe 10 times and I couldn't believe how much of the episode was left.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing.
Yeah, so...
Another just tiny little thing. I always do this at the end because, you know, I forget to bring it up before.
Sure. But
this was the first one, or one of the main ones, where the CGI really bothered me. Like, I didn't think the CGI... Yeah, I didn't think the new effects looked good at all.
What in particular? Is there a scene, or is it just the plant, the way the planets looked and everything?
Mostly the ships. I didn't think that probe thing looked very good, and I didn't think the Enterprise looked very good. But that's, I mean, neither here nor there.
Right.
It's just, you know, people, I know people are very divided over that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to agree with you. I do think that it's still too saturated, isn't the word, but it's like too strong of an image on the space shots and everything like that. I wish they could have toned it down a little bit. The phaser looked okay, although the phaser doesn't act like a phaser in this episode for some reason.
Yeah, it's like a weird, like, battering ram wall of laser beam or something. It's really weird.
And it does act in one way like a normal. In the totally inconsequential 2 minutes that we watched Chekhov heat up the rock with the security guards.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot about that. That was so fucking dumb.
Why did he even go to the planet? He doesn't do anything.
I don't know.
He doesn't do anything.
Because the Russians were sad.
Oh, my goodness. And he's...
There's a lot of this. You know what? This episode feels almost like it was written, like they just passed the script around the room.
Yeah.
And everybody wrote the next scene or something. Because it's like they get down to the planet. All right, pass it over. And then a bunch of cavemen show up. Okay, pass it over. Turns out the cavemen are part of another society that don't know what women are.
Right.
Okay, pass it over. Now they send them into this cave where the food is. Turns out the food's a trap. Okay, pass along.
By the time it gets to the fifth writer, he's like, I don't like Chekhov, so I'm not going to continue his story. And he just kind of drops them off, yeah.
And then there's a woman who meets them at the bottom, but it's not the same woman. Pass it on. Okay, I guess Kirk shoots the woman. All right, easiest way to get through that. Okay, let's move on.
Why were there two women?
Well, I don't know.
It's just so weird. It's just, the more you think about it, the more it just sort of falls apart. But... I think we're done with it. We're going to move on to our Patreon recording. So that will lead us into this section where I plug all the housekeeping stuff. If you're on YouTube and you enjoyed listening to us talk about this one, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes or any other podcatcher, if you could rate us on there, we'd appreciate it. You go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast, patreon.com/thepenskypodcast. We're going to be talking about our top five television traumas, which is coming out soon, or it will already be out by the time this comes out. You can check that out there, and the top five comedies we'll be talking about there. You pay $2 a month, you get that content, additional content, helps support the show and all that stuff. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you. If I could make a quick plug.
Sure.
My book, Redline, that I'm drawing for Oni Press, is on the shelves right now. So I suggest everybody go and get one. There's a giant severed dick in the second issue.
There's two issues out at this point, and probably by the time this comes out, so you guys can check them both out. Yeah, and you can a lot of penis art in that series, I think.
Hey, they asked for it, and I wasn't going to just, you know, go halfway with it. So
you have to ask them if
let that color you on what the book is about. It's not just about dicks. Very interesting sci-fi noir story that takes place on Mars.
Yes, it's a very sort of dry, or not even dry, it's sort of a funny, it's a comedy, I guess, is the way I describe it. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, wherever you are, thanks for coming on. I know you had a meeting and you had to run and skedaddle, but you'll be back at some point in the future. But guys, thank you very much, and I will see you next time.